Welcome to the Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire review of the 2016 season. Some high points, some low points, and some in-between points. Richard Shorrock joining the studio, as ever, by Mark Wilson. Mark, we'll sum up the year at the end. we'll start with, how were we feeling January, February time going into the season after Leeds Rhinos' treble exploits of 2015?
I know, it's hard, isn't it? Hard to think back, you know. I've been speaking to some of the Leeds players in the build-up to their Boxing Day friendly, and it's like, wow, can't believe what a difference a year makes. And who would have thought? I think when we sat in the studio at the start and all made our predictions, you know, Scoie famously tipped Widnes to be bottom. I don't think we'd have had Huddersfield Giants bottom. I don't think we'd have had Leeds in the bottom four. Unbelievable season, really. Same old at the top end. Castleford came close. Horrible injury crisis for them. The Black and Whites finally got that win at Wembley. So I look at it and think, would we have foreseen a lot of what happened? Probably not, really. You know, but is that not why we love sport and why we love rugby league? Because you're never quite sure what's going to happen.
No, never quite sure, which is the... As you say, the great thing about rugby league, and we still have no idea what will happen in 2017 with the various moves. And
well, we might not have any players left for it.
Well, no, that's true.
If they're all allowed to retire.
Well, I was thinking about retiring myself, but I don't know if I can get a job in rugby union just yet. So.
Well, yeah, you see, I had visions of you retiring and then go to work for the dark side. Oh. That's what it'd be the equivalent of, isn't it, Mr. Solomon?
I think my bridges are well and truly burnt with the things I say on air about them, let alone Twitter. We'll start with, before we get on to our clubs individually, we'll go through each one in the Super League. We'll talk about the Championship and League One later. The World Club Series, I think between us we saw every game.
Yeah,
I was at Wigan and Brisbane, which was nothing like the game they played 12 months before, which was exciting and close. And this one, well, marred, I guess, for Wigan by the injury to Mickey McAlorum. And he was out for the season, which was another thread we'll have through 2016. But they never were really at the races against Brisbane. St Helens against Sydney was, I think, one of the worst games I've seen in a long time. And Leeds just didn't turn up against North Queensland Cowboys.
Did well for a half, didn't they? I watched that game. They did well for half, and then ultimately second half got blown away. I mean, deja vu, as so often we've seen England against Australia or club side against Australian club side. It happens all the time. But I think we're all interested in the expanded series and how it would work. But I think what this year did, it proved that with nothing on the other two games, they weren't really the spectacles we wanted them to be. So I'm all for expanding it, but I'm not sure it worked. I think the way forward for the World Club Challenge is that it goes overseas. It goes to America. It goes to Dubai. Whoever's willing to pay for it, they can have it. Let's get some money into our game instead of, you know... It's a tough ask for a British team to win it. I just don't think it at the minute it's not doing what we need it to do for our sport. That's my opinion.
Let's look at the 2016 season in Super League and start. We'll work our way up to the top. I've got the table here. 12th after 23 weekly rounds with the Huddersfield Giants, 6 wins and 17 defeats. For the team from the John Smith Stadium, and it's a difficult one to talk about Huddersfield because obviously it's a season no one would have wanted on the field, but in essence, it doesn't really matter because, of course, we had the tragic passing of Ronan Costello in June, which again brought back to us, especially, you know, less than a year on from Danny Jones, of how hard this sport is on people and how you are, you know, seconds, split seconds, milliseconds, whatever, from something tragic, and this was a tragic accident occurring.
Yeah, horrible, wasn't it? And I mean, what a terrible year it has been for the Huddersfield Giants. I was lucky enough to be invited to their end of season presentation awards, and Ken Davey was, you know, you could tell so upset by everything that had happened, and the club have been united behind what happened to Ronan. A tragic accident as it was, and I just think it made everyone just think again about what happens in our sport. You know, we're all quick to criticise players and etc., but they do put their bodies on the line, and every single time they run that ball in, or they try and make a tackle, or they try and catch a ball. So Yeah, horrible, horrible. And, you know, it came in... Well, there's never a good time for anything like that to happen, but it just... I think that week as a whole, it summed up Huddersfield's year, terrible year, tragic year. But it also showed, actually, you know, what a class club they are with Andy Kelly, the way he handled himself. I spoke to Andy quite a lot through the process, and at one point I said to him, mate, I don't know how you're coping with this. He said, because I find it hard to talk about it. And I met Ronan once. We did a media day down at the ground. We talked to him on radio and TV Yorkshire, lovely kid. And yet Andy was the glue, I almost feel, that held that club together. He was interim coach as well, wasn't he, shortly after that. So credit to the people involved for what they did at that time and how they handled themselves. Credit to Ronan's family as well. It must be horrible as a parent. I can't even imagine what it was like for them. But it has been a bad year, you know, on and off the field, and even taking that aside, which the club will never, ever do. You know, that'll be with them forever, and it'll be with everyone in rugby forever. But it's been a terrible year. We said at the start, you know, when we make our predictions and we met them in good faith, no one had Huddersfield at the bottom. We thought they might struggle a little bit, but not to that extent.
And obviously, then we look at the players at the other end of their career, in Luke Robinson, who was forced to retire at the start of the season, Earl Crabtree at the end, and... Again, we see the wear and tear on bodies there, and especially in Luke Robinson's case, a key creative player for them, literally had to do without for the whole season.
Well, if you look at Huddersfield's season, going back to the start, obviously the Brett Ferris saga, Leeds gain was Huddersfield's loss.
Which we said at the time, didn't we?
Yeah, he moved on. Brett moved on for reasons everyone knows about. Moved on. Light on numbers, brought some good players in, Rapira and Inchcliffe, I thought were brilliant for Huddersfield throughout the season, but their squad was short on numbers. It had an awful injury crisis at the start, and to be fair to Paul Anderson, he put the kids in, the kids didn't let him down, but they just never got back, did they, from that bad start. I think when Paul was sacked, second from bottom, I think they had 4 wins in 16 or something like that, and you're never going to recover from that kind of start.
I remember... flicking right to the end of the season, and the 2 games I saw them against Hull KR, well, towards the end of the season, there was one mid-season when Andy Keller was in charge, his last game before he went off to coach the England Academy and before Rick Stone came in, and they played really well in that one, and then the game at the end of the season where they were down and out against Hull KR, and then somehow they fought back and avoided the £1 million game, and for everything that was wrong with this season on the field, and you know, they got that opportunity and they remain in Super League in 2017. So
I think that's the job was done, wasn't it? That's the one good thing that come out of it. Now, the problem that Huddersfield have got, and this is me saying this, my opinion, not anyone else's here, is they are paying the price for 3 years of poor recruitment, in my opinion. The squad's not big enough. They've released even more players this year. From my understanding, there's more to go. They haven't got a team. They had a team photo the other day, a joking one with the funny hats on. There's 12 people on it.
Was it Blackpool who did that in football last year? They had about 5 players.
Yeah, and it's like, come on, guys, you cannot. You know, this is like when Wakefield used to be in administration or the Bulls and they'd have 3 players training. Oh, who's this guy? He'll play at scrum half. We'll get him in. It's almost like that, and we shouldn't be saying that about a Super League team. Big changes at Huddersfield being made. They need to hope they hit the ground running, because I fear 2017 could be more of the same for the Giants.
It could be. One of the highlights for them came with a victory over Hull FC when Hull were top of the table and Huddersfield were bottom. Craig Murdoch and Gary Schofield watched this one for Radio Yorkshire.
Big following from Hull FC, as we'd expect, and there to my right, as we sit here at John Stith Stadium in Huddersfield, and we're underway. Ellis with the kick, it's in behind, Brill is chasing the ball, it's into the arms of Michael Lawrence, and that's the first try of the game. That kick was right on the money from Jamie Ellis. Brill couldn't get it down, Michael Lawrence certainly could. The first try goes the way of the Giants. We've been playing 16 minutes, it's Huddersfield 4, Hull FC 0.
Well, it's all about attitude this game, I'll tell you what, in Huddersfield I've got the attitude, and quite simply Hull haven't, and I must say, Craig Murdoch fully deserved the Giants for this lead. Hull FC, after 18 and a half minutes, just have not had the right attitude. But fair play to the Giants, they've turned up tonight, they're in the mood. I tell you what, You wouldn't know who was the top and who was the bottom here at this moment in time, would you?
What I'm glad is, though, Scully, that me and you are sat up here and we're not going to listen to Lee Radford's team talk, because I think we'll probably hear him from here.
I'll tell you what, mate, if there's any pain in that dressing room on the walls, I won't be after he's finished, I can reassure you.
No, not happy.
And rightly so.
Yeah.
The attitude here, the attitude at this moment in time for the Black and Whites is appalling.
Price with the pass to Fanoa. Can Fanoa get away from Brayley? He's still going, he's Fanoa. Still going, looking to get the pass away. Finally gets it away to Michaels. Has Michaels got that ball down? Wow, so much to talk about there. Fanoa's just handing players off for fun. Brayley was like a little pup trying to get him over the line. The referee has said no try. Yeah, his arm's on the...
The last one was given last week. That is a try. It is a try. And so if that one last week was given, that has to be given.
And I think these ones, Scully, I don't think you can watch them in slow motion.
No,
I think you've got to watch them in real time.
I agree, mate. I agree totally.
No try.
Pathetic. Pathetic.
Comes Jake Connor to bring him down. Houghton finds a gap down the short side to Washbrook. Washbrook's over the line. Can he get the ball down? Yes, he can. Hull FC haven't wasted any time in getting right back in the game. 4 minutes in the second half and Hull FC score their first try. Danny Washbrook off the bench. It's Huddersfield 8, Hull FC 4.
You know, the attitude and the purpose in the running, the determination. That's exactly what Danny Washbrook has got, but take nothing away. Jordan Thompson, he's set the lead as well.
Fanua over the top. Now it's the last. Back to Wood. Wood with a little dink. It's bouncing all over. It's going to be a try. The ball, Danny Washbrook was there, but he couldn't bring it in. The try is for Huddersfield. Tom Simon, Scully says, has got it down.
It's not about the good, it's more about the bad and the ugly with the Black and Whites, but take nothing away from the Giants. They got the mistake in the end, and I say good creativity, nice kicking game.
What happened was it hit the post. It hit the post, and then Danny Washbrook was expecting it to go behind. It hit the post, bounced back and off his legs and into the in-goal area, and then the rest is history as Simons is first to react. Wood to Ellis. Ellis further wide to Simons, who created the numbers on that far side. McGilvery goes for the corner. McGilvery's in, and Huddersfield have scored back-to-back tries, and Huddersfield are turning on the style. It's Huddersfield 18, Hull FC 6.
Well, this is what Huddersfield could do to you. Well, it's good player. Jamie Ellis has certainly taken charge of this game tonight, and just the creativity. Well, McGilvery, he just proves again why he's England's best winger at this moment in time.
But it's a quick play of the ball. It's to that right-hand side to McGilvery again. McGilvery's in against Scully. You wanted one, they've taken four. McGilvery, too big, too strong. He crashes over on the far side, and things go bad to worse from the Black and Whites. It's Huddersfield 22, Hull FC 6.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I say, McGilvery, you give him half a chance, I'd say. He's the best English winger so far in Super League this year, and the strength is what he's got. He only needs half a yard, and he's going to put that four-pointer on you there. Sitting off and away here, the Giants have been absolutely outstanding and fully deserve the 2 points. And as I say, the performance, what you put here tonight compared to last week, one thing for sure, boys, you've not been dishonest tonight. You've been a credit to the Giants, you've been a credit to your chairman in Ken Davey, and you've been a credit to your coach in Andy Kelly.
Welcome back to Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire, and I'll look back at the 2016 season. We've done with Huddersfield, so we'll move up one place. So I guess we're skipping over Hull KR for a moment, because I think Hull KR and Hull FC stories are intertwined. We're going to talk about the Leeds Rhinos, because if we were shocked by Huddersfield's season, no one would have expected Leeds to go from winning every single trophy available to them in 2015 to winning nothing and finishing in the bottom four and having to fight for their place in Super League in 2017. What an odd season at Headingley.
I think the highlight of Leeds' season was Gary Etherington sending that letter out saying there was no crisis at Headingley, when everyone else in the world is thinking, there's a crisis at Headingley, what's going on? Their season, from their perspective, washed away on Boxing Day, wasn't it? The floods that hit Leeds and affected so many people, but washed the Rhinos out of their home. And I know Scully, and I know we've questioned this on a regular basis. How much of an impact does it have? It clearly did have an impact, yeah. You know, and we'll give Phil Kaplan that one, who defended them week in, week out on the show. But it did undermine what they were trying to do. And they're another side that struggled early on in the season, found it incredibly tough. And once they were in the mix at the bottom, teams enjoyed putting one over on them, and no matter what Leeds tried, they could not get themselves out of that mix. I mean, in the end, they did well actually not to finish bottom of the pile, but they weren't good enough. That's the thing. Right. Same players, Not good enough. Seguiaro coming in at the end, I thought, probably glossed over or papered over a few cracks, I think. But what it did again, and we mentioned this with Huddersfield, it looks at recruitment. And a lot of people were calling for Brian McDermott to get the sack, which I thought was unjust given everything he's achieved at the club. I think you've got to look at the recruitment again, and it shows if you don't recruit properly, you're going backwards. And that's a problem that Leeds have had. And I think, again, I'm going to say it now, it's a problem Leeds have got. I think they're finishing the bottom half in 2017. I'll happily go with that. But the recruitment wasn't good enough. And Seguiaro coming in and now subsequently going out, it's not looking any rosier, is it?
I'm not one to call out players, but Beaufaloon was kind of like the player Wakefield would have signed in the mid-2000s. Just not up to it.
Yeah, and I think when you know, if ever there's a truer statement of a club that was struggling bodies-wise and still leaving him out, I think that says everything, doesn't it? And, you know, Falloon's time in England was a miserable one, and he's moved on now. But, yeah, disappointing, I think. I just don't think they recruited well enough, Leeds, and obviously the Hardacre story played out, and that didn't help things as well. So, you know, you look at bad years, and Leeds have just had one, haven't they? The question is, are they going to bounce back? I don't know. I'm not so sure they are.
Do you find it strange that they've let Hardacre go out for another year? Because obviously he's a class player. He was the man of steel 12 months ago.
I think if they could have guaranteed sacking him and getting £250,000 for him in a transfer, they would have got rid of him. That's my opinion again. I think they'd come... They'd too much water had gone under the bridge and that was it. The line had been drawn, and I think it was best for everyone that he moved on. Went to the NRL, didn't he, midway through the season. Spoke to him the other week at Cass, and he enjoyed every second of it. I think Zach's a guy that needs a challenge, and I think when he'd done everything he'd done in 2015, one man of steel, he needed a new challenge. And, with hindsight, you wonder, could something have been done to move him on a bit quicker? But it didn't help.
No.
It didn't help. But at the same time, there were a lot of injuries for Leeds, but there were also, I think, a lot of excuses from Leeds, and I don't think they did themselves justice. And interesting, speaking to the players now, looking ahead to the new season, they're all saying, we've got to be better. We weren't good enough. No one mentions the injuries. There might have been a passing comment on the gym, you know, how unhelpful it was, and saying now it's nice to be in your own environment this time of year. But I think the players know themselves they weren't good enough.
Well, I mean, here's a stat. I'm just flicking through the results from 2016. Leeds conceded 50 points in Super League on three occasions.
Mm.
One to Warrington, fair enough. You know, they went on to the
grand final. I remember watching that game. It was like me and you were playing.
But the other two were against Cass and Widnes, who they shouldn't be conceding 50 points, and no disrespect to either of those teams. Although, well, in the 2016 season, of course.
But that Widnes one, was it round two or round three?
Round two, yeah.
Early in the... It was a week before the World Club, I think, wasn't it? Or the couple of weeks before it, and it was like everyone went, oh, hang on, something's not right at Leeds. And I think we knew from that moment on that they were going to be struggling. So, yeah, like you said, but what I think it did is it showed that aura, you know, no Peacock, no Sinfield, no Luluai. The aura's gone from Leeds. It was like when Ferguson left United.
I was just about to say,
the aura has gone. And while we've got the chance to hurt you, we're going to hurt you. Cass did it, went to Headingley and won a couple of times. Teams are not frightened of them anymore. And Leeds have got to earn that respect back. You know, it's the credit they had in the bank's gone now. They've got to re-earn the credit and prove themselves. And to be fair, that team, full of winners, they've got to go and win it again, haven't they?
And as you say, as much as it's hurt them this season, a lot everyone else has loved seeing Leeds down the bottom. A lot of Schadenfreude there, and a lot of teams have enjoyed it. As you say, Cass scoring 50 points there. Wakefield winning on the Easter Monday. So, yeah, Wakefield finished above Leeds for the first time in a dog's age. It's been...
Mate, sport, I was always told from you, sport is cyclical. And you'll have your good times, you'll have your bad times. And Leeds this year had a bad time. How long they have bad times will depend on how quickly they can turn it round. But look, as fans of other clubs, and we make no bones about who we support, we're not Leeds Rhinos fans. Of course you're gonna enjoy. It's probably the wrong word, but I don't know.
When we come in on a Monday and Phil and Gary are there.
Yeah, but that's only because it's Phil and Gary. And we're like taking the mickey out of them, isn't it? But look. Sport is great, and when it's your time, you've got to enjoy it, and when it's not your time, you've got to suck it up and get on with it.
They did show signs of life towards the end of the regular 23 rounds. They went to Hull FC and won, and we've got the highlights now of a game at Henley against Wigan, which we were all at. It felt more like a semi-final than a game between a team who knew they were in the top four and a team who knew they were in the bottom four. Here's the highlights. Mark was alongside the aforementioned Phil Kaplan for this one.
All about to get underway then. Leeds in their black strip going from left to right. They're attacking the open terrace here. James Segayaro and Frank Paul Nuasala must be wondering what on earth is going on here tonight. Great catch from Sargentson from the kickoff. Jones Buchanan gets it away. Lillard running across the field. Gets a pass to Watkins, who's through a gap. Now Watkins going for the line. Great tackle, Tierney, but he spins out of the tackle. And has he got it down? That will be an unbelievable try for Callum Watkins, who was too big and too strong for not three but four Wigan defenders. We said it had a big start. It doesn't get any bigger than that. Leeds 4, Wigan 0.
Wow. That's Callum Watkins back to his England best. He went through it, but it looked like four Wigan men had closed him down, but he stayed upright, he twisted, he used his strength, his power. They couldn't put him down, his leg drive, and while two or three of them went up top, he just twisted out, went over the top of them and planted the ball down. 11 minutes gone.
It's a confident strike, and the flags go up, and Leeds have the six-point lead. They've got the ball middle of the park. They come into Smith, fires a pass to Williams. Williams is going to dink it in behind. Great kick, and Charlie will stroll in to score. Briscoe had come in to stop the attempted pass, and the kick went straight behind him. And Josh Charlie won't score an easier try than that this season. It's Leeds Rhinos 6, Wigan Warriors 4.
And Leeds' fault this season has been conceding on the back of penalties, and they've done it there again. What a great start to the game, though. This is proper summer rugby, isn't it?
As Smith now will come forward from the touchline, and he's pulled it badly. The shocker. 6 points to four, Leeds lead. We've had 16 minutes. It's been a breathtaking 16 minutes here. Cuthbertson, good carry. Runs in, and the tackle made now. That was a tackle round the knees, and Cuthbertson is not happy. And Ryan Hall is furious on the far side. That was a tackle in the back of the knees, and that one might be getting reviewed.
Yeah, and that's exactly what Brian McDermott was talking about. It's a horrible tackle.
It's Tortai.
Yep. Yep. I don't think Tortai will play in the semi-final on what we've just seen on a replay.
I think the only saving grace for Adam Cuthbertson is he saw it coming.
Yeah.
And he managed to get the weight off his knee.
But there was nothing he could do about it to avoid the contact.
No, but he wasn't firmly planted. That's my point. He managed just to get his foot off the ground in time.
Yes, but the intent was there.
And I think that'll be a standing ovation from all four parts of the ground, because we've had an entertaining first half.
I think that's just been one of the most enjoyable 40 minutes of the season. We haven't seen quality all the way through it, but we've seen speed, we've seen endeavour. Been all action. I can't believe that's 40 minutes.
Here's Ablett, sidestepping his way through the big fella. He needs some support, he gets it away, and Cuthbertson will score! And Leeds extend their lead. Cuthbertson celebrates, but that was all about Carl Ablett. The power of the big man bumped up the defenders and slips the ball inside. Second try of the night for Leeds. They lead 10-4.
That was an absolutely wonderful piece of work from Carl Ablett. Cuthbertson goes over near the post, but what a great piece of work for Carl Ablett. Pass one, pass two, pass three, having his shorts held on. A fourth and a fifth came in and he still couldn't put him down, and he got the ball away to Cuthbertson for the try.
Smashes it high into the stand, and it's Leeds 12, Wigan 4. Ball kicked towards the corner. Here's Hall and Kynos after it. There's a real bounce, and it's touchdown by Brett Ferris. And have Leeds just toppled the Wigan Warriors. The try is given, but only when the video referee agrees that it is a try. Robert Higgs, it didn't look too much wrong with that. Great high kick, everybody after it. The ball shot straight into the arms of Brett Ferris, who simply had to fall over the line to score.
Scoreboard.
Try given, 16 points to 4. And Leeds are going to surely now make it 4 Super League wins in 5 games. Charlie's bumped off Watkins, gets the pass away, bounces up, and Wigan are in. Wigan have scored in the corner, and I think it's Higginson, is it, that's got the try?
Yep.
Jack Higginson, the substitute, has got over in the corner from the offload from Charlie, and maybe, just maybe, Wigan are not quite done and dusted. It's Leeds 18, Wigan 8. The ball comes back in now. Here's Williams. He's gone straight through the middle. Williams takes on Sutcliffe, and he's going to score at the side of the post. Sensational footwork from the Wigan halfback, and George Williams might
might just have turned this game right on its head, because with a kick to come, it's Leeds 18, Wigan Warriors 40.
Well, that was just genius from George Williams. He's been threatening to do that all night. He's made a couple of half breaks, and on the last tackle, he just held the ball out and thought, I could put in a kick, I could pass, but actually, I'm going to back myself. And he went from 30 metres, took one off the ruck, went ghosted through two players, then came to Liam Sutcliffe, just had far too much pace and went round him.
They might have one more tackle. Oh, he's played the ball, it's gone forward, and that's it. And listen to the reaction here. Sean Wayne looks on, he's not happy tonight. His Wigan side came here needing a win to go top, and they've been beaten. Leeds off the bottom. What a game tonight. What an atmosphere at the end. The Leeds fans celebrate like they did when they won big semi-finals here in years gone by.
Welcome back to the Rugby League on Radio Action review of 2016. We're dropping out of the bottom four for a short time, and we head to the team that finished eighth after 23 weekly rounds, and eighth after the Super Eights, the Challenge Cup semi-finalists, as they were the Wakefield Trinity Wildcats. Now, this is my favourite part of the programme, obviously, and I've carefully curated a nice little highlights package, which will follow shortly. But at the start of the season, Mark, as ever, the experts, 12th, 11th, there or thereabouts, none of us expected what was going to happen, as we've said, with Leeds and with Huddersfield. And what a difference a change in coach makes. We go back very early in the season to the 6th of March, the Catalan Kangaroos winning at the at Bellevue. I think you were at that one, weren't you?
I heard him say
those words.
I witnessed the dismay on Brian Smith's face.
that was a strange time, wasn't it? The departure of Brian Smith and his Facebook postings.
Yeah, look, I mean, we were lucky enough. We had good access to Brian throughout the pre-season, and he was absolutely bouncing. Yeah. You could tell. They were training down at Featherstone. He was happy with what was happening. The boys were training hard. The facilities were good. They were building up to the new season. A lot of people thought Brian might have walked away. Michael and everyone thought, oh, his coup has kept him. He's got a real coup there. He's kept Brian Smith. And it quickly became apparent. I think they lost to Widnes, didn't they, on the opening day of the season?
Yes, yes.
In a game which he felt really the Wildcats could have done with winning. And you just thought, oh, here we go again. And I half wonder if that's what Brian Smith thought, I should probably have gone. Mm-hmm. But I've never been to a press conference where a coach has walked out and the people at the club have been so happy. And that's what, there was no worry, there was no concern. I think people were quite pleased. The ramblings that came out after, I mean, you know, Brian will say what Brian will say, and he obviously is privy to more information than we are, and he's there, and he will determine what he believes to be the facts. But the insinuation that I think was made in some of those messages was Michael Carter was not doing his best for the club, which I'm not having that in any way, shape or form. And I think the proof is in the pudding. The coach has been back to the hilt then. The new coach has been back to the hilt now. You look at the recruitment that Wakefield have done, and I would argue, when you look at it on paper, you look at the recruitment they've done, and it's probably one of the best that we've seen. So I know you're the Wakefield fan in the room, but we asked, would you want an owner like Michael Carter, or would you want an owner like some others in the game? And I think we all know what the answer would be. So I almost pitied Brian for coming out. I thought, you're a great of the game, and you're coming out with some tin pot accusations. And if you've got something to say, come out and say it. Point the fingers. Be man enough to make the comment and stand by it instead of hiding behind the cloak and daggers. But it's interesting, the cloak and daggers and the, I'm going to say, beer-fueled rants, because that's only what I can imagine they are, soon died up, didn't they, when the results turned around under the new coach.
And how ironic that the new coach was the one that was sacked because Hull KR lost to Wakefield on the 21st of February. By 2 points. I think,
well,
Paul Gow's goal.
You know, people talk about karma and what goes around comes around. And I look at the Chris Chester sacking at Hull KR, and I know we'll talk about them later. Disgraceful. If you're going to get rid of him at the end of the season. Yeah, he got to Wembley, they got spanked, but they won every game in the middle eights. Yeah. He would have gone out on a high, reputation intact. Keep him in for three games, sack him. Then we get all these statements on the Old Car website from Neil Udgell, which I think at the time you think, Then you actually go back and look back at them and you think, nah, they're not very good. Chester came to Wakefield. He's a Wakefield lad, isn't he? Natural fit for him. Came in, said Wakefield are going to play good rugby. They did play good rugby. They started winning on the field and pretty much secured their... I know it went... Eventually went down to the wire, but for me, they played some good stuff.
Here's a sequence of results from, and you'll hear more of this game in a moment. On March 25th, Good Friday, 36-22 over Huddersfield. Easter Monday, 20-16 at Leeds. A lot of fortuity in that win, but still. On the Saturday after, they beat Salford 32-18, and that was a game that they, you know, they're up against a rival side there. They have to win it, and obviously Salford got a points deduction later. The week after that was the amusing game we didn't cover, Wakefield 62, Wigan 0, which is still bizarre. Then a couple of weeks later, they won at Widnes. They beat Warrington at home, and at the Magic Weekend, beat the Catalan Dragons with that Jake and Miller drop goal. It fell away after that, but they also had the cup run, obviously spanked by Warrington in the semi-final. C'est la vie, they were always expected to win. The job was done. The job was done for Wakefield. I know a lot of people were disappointed with the results in the Super 8s, but you'd rather have been in the Super 8s and have to worry about being in the million-pound game again.
Wakefield's season ended when they lost in the semi-final of the Cup, and that's not saying they chucked the towel in. That's saying they invested everything into that game, and after that, and they did get a lot of injuries, and then they sent people for surgery early, planning for this year. So the pain at the end of last season should be again at the start of this one. There is absolutely, and this is a problem with sport, oh, they lost all them games in the Super, they're rubbish, the coach doesn't always... No. They'd done what they had to do. How many times you sit in a football, team safe from relegation, probably don't win another game all season. It happens. Mentally, these guys climbed Everest for me last year. Everyone wrote them off. Everybody. And they somehow found a way to make the top eight, and it's always going to be hard in the top eight. Even the good teams will tell you it's hard in the top eight. That's what it's supposed to be like. But for me, Chester did a fantastic job. Great fun on and off, you know, on and off the field, if you like, or on and off mic, however you want to look at it. Delighted for him. And I think Wakefield, a lot of people again, will be in the bottom four. Well, let's just see. Recruitment says different, I think.
We'll find out. But if you're a Wakefield supporter, savour these specially curated moments from 2016.
Ball going back. Here's Brough. Is he going to run it? He is on the last. Here's Connor. He kicks away. Well, Murphy's offside here. Murphy's caught it and he offloads it straight to Finn. Finn gets it to Johnson. Johnson cuts in. Now he's got Connor in front of him. He sidesteps Connor. He's got
it.
Tom Johnson! From his own try line. He has just gone 100 metres to surely win the game for the Wakefield Trinity Wildcats. What a score! Wakefield lead 28-22, kick to come.
I'll tell you what, Mark Wilson, some of these fans here have scored, seen some wonderful tries from the greats out of Grace's ground, but young Johnson, geez, there was nothing on for him there. He's 90 yards away from his own try line. He steps out of one, he steps out of two, and then he gives a big fend off to Simpson, and then he's got the pace and the guard to get straight under the black dot. That is one of the best tries these fans have seen here at Bellevue for many, many years. Great try from Johnson. Has he won the game now for the Wildcats?
Cuthbertson goes to the left to Hardacre, and now Hardacre almost gets out of the Liam Finn tackle.
Here's the last.
Enough. Poor player from Leeds though.
No.
Down the short side.
What is Handley going to do with
that
ball?
It's into the hands of Craig Hall, and Craig Hall's down the touchline. Craig Hall's got too much pace. Wakefield are going to win the game. Craig Hall is going to go 100 metres and he's going to score in the corner. That's the ball game. Crazy player from the Rhinos. You get what you deserve. You reap what you sow. Call it what you will. Poor game management from the Rhinos. Going for the six. Shocking play down the short side into the arms of Craig Hall, and he sprints 100 metres down the touchline to win the game for Wakefield. Wow,
Wow, crazy from the Rhinos. Chris Chester will not believe his luck, Phil.
Well, what we've said is Leeds' last tackle plays have been absolutely appalling all afternoon and for most of the season. What was Beaufaloon doing then? Last tackle, and Leeds are setting up for a drop goal in front of the post. Sutcliffe will look like the man that was most likely to go for it. Falloon goes on the blind side, doesn't tell anybody, there's nobody there other than Ash Handley, throws him a ball at his shoulder, the ball goes to ground, Hall picks up and goes, thank you very much, towards the Wakefield fans, 90 metres down the touchline, the only man chasing him is Anthony Mullally, he was never going to catch him. Callum Watkins sprints over from the other side as the rain starts to pour down, and all Hall can see are the Wakefield fans beckoning him to the line, takes it in at the corner.
He's just to the left of the post, is Pat Richards. Had a fancy Pat Richards with a drop goal as well from that kind of distance. Remember that one at Langtree Park that night for Wigan? Here is Richards, kicks on its way, and he's missed it, and it's bounced back into the hands of a Wakefield player. Chris Anakin it is, and Chris Anakin's still going. Those posts are going to collapse.
Wow.
Huge cheers from the Wakefield fans. It's not
and
over yet.
And the Hull fans at the back of the sticks
and
as well.
And the Hull fans as well. This is a good result for the Hull fans.
The Hull fans are shouting for Wakefield.
They will be. Here's Michael Seo from Dummy Half, who's just got back out there. They're 15 short of halfway. 3.5 minutes left. Dave Taylor's just been shown on the screen, who can't believe it, as Mikael Simon tries to make up for his error of giving that penalty away. As the Wildcats now got a couple left inside for Anakin.
Nice deep kick here for deep kick in the corner. Try and force a mistake from Pat Richards. Jacob Miller's going for the 50-yarder. The Wakefield fans will tell you. The Hull fans are telling you.
Oh,
the Hull fans are Wakefield fans telling you.
From 50 metres out. 3 minutes left. And Jacob Miller has put the Wakefield Trinity Wildcats ahead.
Norton, I told you something was going to happen.
It's 25 points to 24.
I told you something was going to happen.
He's an absolute monster.
I told you something was going to happen. This game wasn't finished. And well, Jacob Miller, a 50-yarder drop goal there. It wasn't just the Wakefield fans that was telling you it was going over. The Hull fans as well on the far side could tell you it was going from 50 yards out. Boy, oh boy, what a jump kick there from Jacob Miller.
He was a step inside his own half.
There's a lot of finger pointing going on in the Wakefield attacking line. They're going to go down the short side, and Fafita is in! David Fafita has scored. Well, he was 66-1 to open the scoring. Have I had a bean on him? No. Wakefield lead by 4 points to 0.
Yeah, super player from Wakefield, and he was going to come on the right-hand side. Wakefield ran a big decoy, and Fafita went round the back of the player, the ball. He took the ball, and that was far too easy, wasn't it?
Out the back to Griggs, miss out pass, intercepted by Johnston, and this is goodnight Vienna, surely. No one's going to catch Tom Johnston. He's off. He is going to score underneath the post, and that could be the game changer. Horrible pass from the Giants. Johnston, who dropped the ball over the line in the first half, won't make the same mistake again. Is that the try that puts the Wildcats into the semi-finals? Giants 8, Wakefield 18.
No substitute for pace markers there. Everybody in the ground knew that as soon as Johnston had caught that.
Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire. More games than any other radio station. Now that's what I call unrivalled.
Welcome to the KCOM Stadium then. Well, it always makes me smile when I hear tales of Gary Schofield being shouted at by Hull fans who've still not forgiven him for making the move to Leeds. What was it, 30? How long ago was it?
29 years, man.
29 years.
I wondered why you were smiling. Then people must have greeted you and said, I hear Scully works for you, Mark Wilson. I wonder why you have got a smile on your face.
It's the best tenner I've ever spent, I'll tell you.
I'll tell you what, mate, again, just with, you know, the Hull fans, and a woman just shouted to me, well, is he the traitor? And I just looked over my shoulder because I've just been talking to Gareth Ellis. I said, he hasn't left yet. They said, oh, no, you know what I mean. So, listen, Hull fans, it was 29 years since I got sold. Due to the financial situation at the club, I was sold. It was simple as that. So it's 29 years ago. Let's put it to bed now, please, eh? Let's put it to bed. But, yes, but I wonder why you were smiling, Mark Wilson, to be honest with you. But also, as you mentioned Minikin there, I tell you what, he wouldn't, because we're not blessed with quality centres, but I tell you, for mine, he wouldn't look out of place in an England shirt. No way made, and they say, well, he's not ready. Well, he's 23, 24 years of age, and when you see the kid playing, I tell you what, if he got in the England squad, I'd say he'd be like an octopus. But he'd like, grow three arms, he'd grow another two heads.
But I'd like that's you, Scully, how do we know? How do we know they're not ready?
Exactly. It's sling him in. Sling him in. I'll tell you what, when I got thrown in at 18 years of age, and I'll tell you what, when I was stood there fronting Marmon Ingan and G Miles and like that, oh, shaking my knees, whoopee for sure. I didn't show how frightened I might have been, but I thought to me saying, OK, I took the philosophy on, like my dad said to me, don't you worry about them, let them worry about you. And I thought to myself, so like you say, not 12,000 miles away, I'm going to face these two big so-and-sos in 24 hours' time. But that's the force of these, and I tell you, Minikin, if he got in that England squad, honestly, he'd grow three, another three legs, two arms. He'd be like an octopus, the kid. Sling him in. But you mentioned about the science of it, Craig, and players, you know, maybe before they're getting tired. I tell you what, young Mason Roberts, they didn't look tired to me, to be honest.
Well,
anyway, what do we know about science? Do you like science at school?
That's the last time I did science anyway, Scully. I'm trying to think how old I am. About 25 years ago was the last time
I
looked
at it. Do you know what I couldn't understand? As I said, I wasn't very good at school anyway.
Chinese writing?
But science, and Chinese added up, to be honest. But science, what was all that about? Where you put the Bunsen burner on and put a piece of glass? What's all that about? What was all that about?
Different school to me, Scully.
Lee Gilmore playing for Shawcross. In the National League.
Did he?
Yeah.
What for? Is he bonkers? Is he bonkers or what?
I think Gilly is bonkers, mate, yeah. I think there's not a lot of arguments about that.
I'll tell you what, mate, one thing I would never, ever have done is gone back and playing to the amateur game. Did you ever play?
I had a couple of games.
Did you?
I had a couple of games for West Hull when I was coaching
you're bonkers, and say no more. It's not only forwards then who are a little bit short between the ears. Craig Murdoch, you must have been as well, going back to that amateur game. Anybody tried taking your head off, breaking your jaw?
Not everybody.
Why did he do it for?
One of the games was Woff Brow away as well.
Oh, lovely. Lovely.
Yeah, good fun.
After 5 minutes, I bet you thought, what am I doing here?
Three, I think.
Just going back to our days, making mistakes. I tell you what, as I say, we're doing it in our day, Len Casey, and certainly who was my coach and as a player, if you're doing it with Len Casey, he'd give you a crack.
I was going to say that.
Give you a crack.
The last thing I would want to do is own up to a mistake. I'd blame everybody. Everybody, the fans, everybody.
Absolutely.
Rather than...
That's why we were halfbacks, Craig. That's what you do. You don't admit to it. Craig Murdoch, the game's been going since 1895. That's always been the same, son. That's always been the same. Let the donkeys do the hard work and let the pretty boys finish off. Is that hard work, is it?
He's taking a bang on the head. I think there might be a bit of blood there as well. He wants to carry on, but the physio's having none of it. The doctor's on. He's coming off for the head test. Dane Tilt's about to come back on. They'll get 15 minutes to look at him. I like Walker. He's big, he's aggressive, he's in your face.
He is, but he's not a bad replacement, is it, Big Tilt? Look at the size of him. He's got to be, 6'15", is he?
6'50", that's 7'3", you donkey.
Not from Belial's, no, it's 6'15".
Just having a think here, Scott. If you were loitering, you know, stand off in the centres and Moy Moy was getting all excited, would you just be shuffling one further out in the defensive line?
I'd be stood on the wing, don't worry about that, son. Hey, hold on. I was against Meningen and Miles at 18. I didn't shirk my responsibility there.
Never said you did. But as you got older and wiser, Scoy, you've got to delegate things like that, haven't you?
Well, as I got older, it only happened once. I moved to stand off and go out of the way. Don't worry about that. I went in the centre too long. Well, I learned my lesson. The doctor is down on the... is in the dugout. And you should not be there, son. Nothing to do with you. Get out of there! Get out! Mind your own business. You know, nothing of the coach's side. Leave him to it, son. Leave him to it. Anyway, that's Scoy's rant for the day.
Yeah.
And there's not that much difference between the director's box and cast and the pitch side anyway, Scully, is there? So it's...
Yeah, I tell you what, mate, this stadium's been the same since all the money that's come in. It's supposed to be for stadiums, supposed to be for this. How many licks of paint has this had since 1996? I said this word a few times on Radio Yorkshire. Rubbish. That was rubbish. What the hell was that?
Rubbish. Rubbish.
Say no more. There's nothing else to say, son. Nothing else to say. Well, I should be a motivational coach, don't you think?
Well, you wind enough people up.
Always get it. I call it a reaction.
A reaction. I bet Darrell Powell were delighted that you called St Helens rubbish in your column in the League Express.
Rubbish and donkeys of no thoroughbreds. Well,
yeah.
Mark, this is why you employ me, son. I can only give an opinion on what I see. It's as simple as that.
Right. What must the players be thinking in that dressing room when Mr. Smith is not picking the best player, not picking Adam O'Brien of the hooker? The players must be going, Is this coach bonkers? My three-year-old grandson, if he were watching the Bradford Bulls DVD, he would pick out the kid with curly hair. Sometimes it's a little bit silly. Looks like the lead singer from the Thompson Twins, don't you? You remember that? With that haircut and shaved at the side. Looks like the lead singer from the Thompson Twins. But one thing the kid can do, one thing he can do, is play rugby league, and he's a quality hooker. Is he a big Dave Taylor? He doesn't want to come out, and I'm just worried. Well, the Catalan's coming out, Craig Murdoch, but one thing for sure, Dave Taylor is not interested in playing this game. Look at him. He might as well be sat with us.
No.
He might as well be sat with us.
Well, I think he'd take all four of them seats sat to our right, go with that. There's nobody.
He doesn't want to play, does he?
I think he's 4XL shorts, they say, don't they? That's what he is, 4XL.
Don't you be saying he'll fit me, I'm telling you. Don't you be saying he'll fit me, Craig Murdoch.
Scoey, I'm your biggest fan, you know that, mate. I'm not going to say that.
They're chanting my name here now. Keep going. If you keep chanting my name, you'll keep me employed here at Radio Yorkshire. Keep chanting. Thanks very much.
We're talking the Catterwood Tigers now on the Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire review of 2016. Mark Wilson in the studio alongside myself, Richard Short. And I guess for Cass, Mark, it's what might have been with those injuries at the start of the season to Michael Shenton and throughout two key players.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah.
Injuries. When I say key players, everyone.
Yeah, you know, they've had to... Andy Lynch went nearly halfway through the season.
Ben Roberts
barely played. So many, you know. I think at times, I mean, I can recall three times I was at the Jungle and Ryan Sheridan and or Danny Orr came in to Daryl, or boss, I need you to have a look at this. Yeah. None of them can train tomorrow. And he went, right, we'll have a day off. They couldn't get bodies on the training ground to train. Simple as that. So I think that was an amazing achievement from Castleford to get fifth. I think they're unlucky. I think they kept everyone fit. I don't think it was a particularly classic year of Super League this year. And I think a fully fit Castleford Tigers probably would have done a little bit more damage than they did.
We almost have to talk about someone we don't want to talk about now.
Oh, you got to, haven't you?
Got it, because we're looking back on the year. Of course, they've lost Luke Dawn to retirement. And another player who's retired is Denny Solomona. 40 tries for him this season, breaking the club and Super League records. And he's obviously going to be missed, is he? Because he scores tries that other people don't score. But...
Yeah, I think, look, you know, and I almost think that Castleford, obviously, and while we've recorded this, and it might be by the time it comes out, it's all been sorted out, and Castleford have received a decent chunk of money. It might be that they're piling all their money into legal bills trying to fight it. So we don't know about that one. And good luck to Castleford. I think everyone in the sport hopes they win their case against Solomona, Andy Clark, and Sale Sharks. But scored some great tries. But was it the perfect storm for him? Mm. Castleford clearly very potent on that left edge. Dawn, Webster, Gale down that side. Absolutely brilliant. I think anyone, and I think Daryl at times was quick to point this out. Hang on. He's missed a few games. He scored nine tries. That winger scored nine tries when he hasn't played. So had he played every game, would he have got the 50? Might have even got more. Mm. You also look as well at the end of the season when Castleford were trying to get him to break the record. It was right, let's get it to Denny as quick as we can. So Castleford very much played for him. And hindsight, as they say, is a wonderful thing. I wonder if in that game against Widnes when he got the hat-trick to break the record, if they'd only were going, I doubt he'd have got a pass all afternoon. So, look, Castleford are a very strong side. I think you put any winger worth his salt on that left edge, probably would have got 25, maybe 30 tries. But yes, you're right, we've got to be honest. Probably 10 of them were wonderful tries that probably only he could score. But that's life. Players move on. Players get injured, players move on. Players get offered more money. I don't think anyone begrudges him moving. I don't think anyone does. Even Castleford don't begrudge him moving. It's how he's gone about it. And the big gripe I have, he's always on Twitter, oh, praise to God for this, praise to God for that, and yet he's just walked out and left his teammates that basically have made him the talent, not made him the talent he is, but Castleford certainly have had an upbringing. I don't remember too many rugby union clubs wanting him when he were on dual reg at London Scholars that happened in his time at London Broncos. So, look, do we begrudge him the money? No. Do we begrudge him how he's done it? Yeah, most certainly we do. So, look, great player. Shame he's gone. Lost for rugby league, he's gone. But time will tell.
And I guess it, from Castleford, from a couple of years ago, being so close to, you know, the Challenge Cup and the League Leaders' Shield, this season he's very much what could have been. There's not really much you can say about it because they didn't have a great run in the Cup. They you know, finished where they did in Super League. They could have made the top four, but didn't in the end. But it's what could have been for Castleford. And I guess a game which sums that up is the highlights we're going to bring you now, which is Hull FC versus Castleford from the first round of the Super 8. Craig Murdoch and Gary Schofield at the KCOM Stadium.
Still Cash knocking on the door. It goes left to Luke Gill. Luke Gill thinks about the pass out the back. Dawn links in, gets it back to Solomono, pushes away. One defender, two more come in. But he gets the ball away, back to his centre partner down the short side. Minikin, first try of the game, Castleford. Great play from Solomono. It was him who made the initial break. And then it was him with the final offload to Minikin. And Minikin had the strength to get over the line. Super start from the Tigers. Their lead 4 points to nil.
Oh, what a great start. But I tell you what a great try there from Greg Minikin. He had absolutely nowhere to go. There were defenders in front of him there for the black and whites. But boy, oh boy, the determination. What the kid showed there. But let's go on about Dennis Solomono. What a great take from Mark Steensbaum.
Through hands to Rangi Chase. Rangi Chase throws one dummy, gets the pass away. It's a chance in this corner, steps inside. Great freak from the winger. Ryan Hampshire, brilliant play for him. He celebrates with the try. Cast double the lead. It's Hull FC 0, Castleford 8. Hampshire with the try.
I'll tell you what substitutes is there from Darrell Powell, because all four of them have made an absolute impact. Certainly when they come up from there. And all the forwards, Jewett, McShane and Millington, they've all been involved from there. And they say Big Matt Cook as well, and just making the easy yards there. And Castleford just literally at their very best, just getting it nice and early, nice and wide away from that ruck area. And say, I tell you what, Hampshire, Craig Murdoch, when he's played, it doesn't matter what position he plays in, whether it's fullback, whether it's six, or whether it's on the wing, he doesn't let Castleford down. He doesn't let his coach down, Darrell Powell. I tell you what, Castleford fully deserve this lead.
The pass is to Millington, links back with Machine. 5-on-3 if they can get the pass there. Savelio does well, no need to cut out to Hampshire. Back it goes to McShane keeps the ball alive, back to Hampshire. It's still the last, but still they've gone from the right side to the left side. Gets the pass away to Dawn, gets the pass away to Minikin, pushes away one, gets the ball back out. It's still on the floor. It's picked up by Luke Gill. That's a trick contender for the try of the season. What a try from Castleford. Sum that one up, Scoey. Castleford go further in front. It's Hull 0, Castleford 14.
I'll tell you what, Craig Murray, that's not classic Cass at the best. I don't know what isn't. That is absolutely sensational rugby league. They created the space, a nice simple run around going from left to right, and they say, well, McShane just keep the ball alive, and Castleford, they just felt, well, we're just going to keep it going, and all of a sudden, what are we on, 10, 12 passes later on, and Luke Gale was the quickest to react. The Hull defence just haven't no idea whatsoever what's going on the Castleford attack, but hopefully for sure the Castleford players do, they react, and I tell you what, they're enjoying being out there here tonight, Craig Murdoch. What a great try from Castleford Tigers.
To the arms of Luke Gill, linking 3-on-2 on that far side, it won't matter. Great try from Castleford, fourth one of the game. Luke Dawn is the best in the business for me, playing that fullback linking role. It was quick play of the ball from Savelio, who got Cass on the front foot. Luke Gill right at the heart of Hull defence. Linking in was Luke Dawn, and it was 3-on-2. He threw the dummy, backed himself, and he got over the line, and Cass extend the lead. To Rangi Chase, throws the dummy, does Chase, gets the ball away on that far side. What about the pass from Rangi Chase? Brilliant play from the standoff half. The pass over the top into the arms of Ryan Hampshire for his second try of the game. And that's the ball game. Hull FC 0, Castleford 24.
That's game over, Kramer. You called it the ball game. Game over, whatever word you want to put on this. But a great play from Castleford Tigers. And what an intercept from Minikin. And they just didn't panic. And, well, Rangi Chase, he's just shown signs of his quality, his individual brilliance, but he's just shown it there, what he's got, and he's still got it. He's a kid, maybe lacking a pace or two, but one thing for sure, that vision and that awareness, and I say that individual brilliance, the pass out of the top draw. Ryan Hampshire gets a double. Castleford, they're going on with the 2 points. There's no doubt about that now, Craig Murdoch.
Abdul to Ellis. Ellis goes forward as Old Faithful for the first time, and that's 63 minutes into the game. Houghton back to Abdul. Abdul gets the ball to Washbrook. Washbrook down the short side. We said about nil and Scully, it's not going to be today. Michael's in at the corner. First try for Hull FC of the game. It's Hull FC 4, Castleford 24.
It is, and that's the first time really we've seen the black and whites go with a bit of purpose and say from the and a bit of urgency. And as I say, even with the passing there, it's just so simple. When you get yourselves in a bit of good field position and you wanna do it, and I say with a bit of vision and awareness and a bit of purpose in it from there, and it's quite simple. Create the overlap. And I say, Michaels, he won't score an easier try. So I tell you what, Craig Murder, we've got 17 minutes left to go on the clock. Is it game on again?
No. Flat pass, gets the ball away to Bowden. Bowden trying to back his way over the line, can't do so. Can Hull FC create a try? This is maybe where they struggle. Abdul, ball to Washbrook. Washbrook's over the line. That was good from Hull FC. Big carry from Pritchard. Two tackles later, ball to the edge. And Danny Washbrook gets the ball over the line. He's there. Is there still time in this game? I still don't think there is. But Hull are making a fight of it. It's Hull 8, Cass 24. We've got 10 minutes left. Doesn't generally miss two in a row. And that record keeps going. 10 to Hull FC, 24 to Cass. We've got 9 minutes left. And I think this is my argument with Pritchard. We've seen in the last 5 minutes, Scully, how effective he can be.
Absolutely.
When he runs with that momentum,
yeah,
he's unplayable.
He's unstoppable. Absolutely. He's unstoppable. But as you say, we don't see enough of it.
Scholl wants in an option. Can he keep the ball alive? Yes, he can, to Danny Washbrook. Washbrook to Pritchard. Pritchard's in a hole. Pritchard straightens up. Still going. Is Pritchard back inside? Jamie Scholl, Frank the Tank, comes into the game and comes up with a piece of brilliance. Excellent from Danny Washbrook initially. Pritchard into the hole. He kept the ball alive to Jamie Scholl, who scores under the post. Well, Scully, well, just maybe. It's Hull FC 14, Castleford 24. Kick to come will be an absolute certain 2 points for Hull FC. And we just wonder.
It is. It'll be 24-16 when it kicks 16 with 6 minutes to go. And this is Hull FC now at the best. And I say Lee Radford, still no emotion and excitement from the coach, because he knows that his team have been very, very disappointed for 70 minutes in this game now. And all of a sudden, Big Frank's decided to have a go. And the big difference in the game when Gareth Ellis comes back on, he gives his teammates a lift. But Frank the Tank, he's just showing what quality he's got. But unfortunately, it's not been enough tonight. And well, the black and white, they've got themselves back into this game with 5.5 minutes to go.
All hit the floor. It's all the posts are swaying as the big guys are banging into the Milner's at dummy half. To the right-hand side, and then a little pass back to the inside to Millington, and again the post.
Look at the post.
Swinging as the big guys hit them. Milner's out of dummy half. How quick was the play of the ball there from Castleford? Hull FC don't like it. The referee stopped the clock, but Castleford haven't waited around. What they're saying, Hull FC, is given the try.
Obstruction, that's what you're trying to say. But they were all based around the post. The post was swaying all over the place. They've all got around the big, you know, the big square what's around there. And Milner said, oh, thank you very much, there's nobody in front of me here, I'm taking the 4 points, so here you go.
I think Hull FC is saying we weren't ready for them to play the ball.
Well, it's tough, it's a quick play the ball, it's tough.
Yeah.
Hey, this is the 4-pointer, simple.
Yeah. Yeah. Only to drop goal, Milner, then you're only looking at it once. Yeah, nothing to argue about that one. Hull FC fans have seen enough now. They're head for the X's. Cass have deserved this victory. All of 10 minutes where Hull FC played, from 63 to 73. Apart from that, it's been all Castleford, and Milner has just pinched one from dummy half there. He makes the scoreline. Hull FC 16, Castleford 28.
It'll be 30 points here now. Once Luke Gailey will slot this over between the post. Right, it's underneath these. And I say it's a great victory for Cass. And as we mentioned before the game started, the team want to put out here tonight. They were coming with plenty of intent. They wanted to put a marker down, and they now were looking from 6 from 7. Now they're looking 5 from 6 to get themselves back into that top four. Luke Gale finishes this game off and finishes the scoring. And I say Castleford fully deserve this victory, 30 points to 16.
Welcome back to the Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire. End of season review, spectacular. I'm not sure what to call it. We've been talking about the Super League for the majority of the programme. Let's dip down into the Championship and League One. Start with a brief look over League One. Not really a great season to write home about for Yorkshire's clubs. Keighley missing out on the playoffs, as did the Hunslet Hawks. York City Knights barely finishing the season, and we hope they have a much better 2017. Congratulations to Toulouse and to Rochdale, who gained promotion to the Championship. I'm sure we'll be seeing them in action next year, especially with Sheffield moving to Wakefield, which is helpful for us as a radio station. But We talk about the championship. We talk about the Leeds Centurions, obviously finishing top, winning the Shield for the second successive year, and more importantly, gaining promotion automatically through the Super 8s. And we'll come to the ramifications of that in a moment. But in the qualifiers, and we'll talk about the positives first, Batley and Featherstone qualifying. Featherstone, who missed out the season before, and Batley coming from nowhere as a semi-pro side, finishing third in the table and getting plenty of paydays. It was a great season for the Batley Bulldogs.
Well, I think the season started off for Batley by beating Lee, didn't it? You know, a wonderful achievement. They got off to this great start and you wonder, oh, they're not going to keep this up, are they, surely? And I think they had a blip and they got a Swinton and lost, or one of the teams near the bottom and they got beaten. You thought, ah, that's them done. But they kept coming back and they kept coming back. And then when the pressure was on right at the end of the season to get in that middle, or the middle eights, and they did find the wins that they needed. And you know what, you think, fair play, John Key did a great job, the chairman did a great job, the players have outperformed themselves, they really have. And I know they didn't get the results they would have wanted in the eights, but I'll say what I said about Wakefield getting there, or achieving their goal that no one gave them a chance to do. Once they'd done that, it didn't matter what happened in the eights, they got there. And you hope, you know, Poison Chalice, look back at the teams who got in the eights last year from the Championship. Bradford, going bust. Sheffield, awful season. Halifax, financial difficulties. It's terrible what's gone on, really, when you look at it. So hopefully Batley won't get that curse. You know, they'll kick on and they'll use the money. And a new coach, obviously, John Key's moved on to Wakefield. Matt Diskin comes in from the Bradford Bulls. He must be delighted with a choices in life he's made in the last 12 months. But it's going to be interesting how they do it. I know, I believe he's been working him hard, Matt Diskin. The players have regarded it as a bit of a step up in intensity. But you're going to look at Batley now, and Batley's big test is, can they follow it up? Can they get in the four again? And you look at the Championship for next year and you see no reason why they can't. London looks strong, obviously. Hull KR, will speak about them, they'll look strong. So the other two spots wide open, I think. So, Batley have done really well for me. Great story. Underdog story. Got their rewards, if you like. And hopefully that will be to the bettering of everyone associated with Batley.
Now, the great positive for Yorkshire is that the top four in the Championship Shield, all from the White Rose County. Dewsbury have had a great parts of the season, but finished, you know, where you would expect it to be in eighth. Sheffield, disappointing season, especially after last year, as you say, in seventh, still homeless, and now having to play the games at Bellevue, which is a disgrace to the people who run the city of Sheffield, but that's politics for another day. Halifax in sixth, and Bradford in fifth, and Bradford went on to win the Championship Shield, which masked over it didn't really mask any problems, did it? Because we all knew about it, and the Championship Shield final was just a nonsense.
Yeah, non-event. I think Bradford were in it before the playoffs started. They already qualified for it. So, look, you know, that doesn't tell it. I remember Scully and Craig commentating on that game against Sheffield. They beat 80-odd nil two weeks prior. It was a non-event. And no Bulls fan worth his salt will take any pride in that winning that Championship Shield. Their season ended when they lost at Featherstone. You would argue the Bradford Bulls might have ended when they lost at Featherstone, a gutless display. Jimmy Lowe's left partway through the season, citing personal reasons. Seems he didn't get on with the powers that be. They brought in Rowan Smith, who was a bit of a left-field appointment. Nice guy, not got anything to say derogatory about him as a person, but a little bit wet behind the ears, I think, if you're going to be honest, when he came in. And you know, even going to Featherstone, asked him about the slope, he laughed it off, and no one in Championship rugby laughs off that slope at Featherstone. And they went, they lose 20-0 or something. They got humiliated in the end, Bradford. And it's going to be interesting whether Bradford, and again, by the time this goes out, we might know the fate of the Bradford Bulls. But at the time of recording, it's still in the balance. In my opinion, they need putting out of the misery. I thought that relegation from Super League would have done that, Rich. But the problem is, whoever takes on the claw, whoever taken it on, has got this illusion of grandeur that Bradford is still a big club. They're not. I'm a Bradford lad, I'm a Bradford fan. They're not a big club anymore. They're fighting with Batley and Dewsbury. That's what they should be looking at and trying to build, like Dewsbury and Batley do. Pay your bills, improve yourselves over time. It takes time. Sport takes time. You know, I remember Castleford, when they were bottom of Super League in franchising, what they did, they give the youngsters a chance, they got better and better and better. That's how you do. You build in sport. You don't buy success in rugby league. It doesn't work. And the Bulls are paying the penalty for years of financial mismanagement.
To use an example, when you talk about big clubs, you know, Wakefield were champions in 68, you know, team of the 60s. You tell me everything's cyclical. I'm waiting for the kind of at the low end of the upswing at the moment. Swinton were a big club. Now they're ninth in the championship. I hope Martin Callum's not listening.
He better be.
Well,
we listen to his show.
So that's the championship. And it will be an interesting competition in 2017. There'll be plenty of it, of course, here live on Radio Yorkshire. More full match commentaries than any other radio station in 2017. And one of the teams in the championship is Hull Kingston Rovers. And we've gone through this programme and had exciting highlights, some great moments for the season for all these teams in Super League. But we come to Hull KR, and the only highlight we can bring you is the end of the season, because that was what was summed up Hull Kingston Rovers in 2016.
Well, I think the Rugby League, when they create the £1 million game, they want the drama. Mm. And you couldn't write that drama, really. I mean, I was watching Ellen Road with it on the iPlayer on the, or whatever it is, the Sky Go, whatever it is, on the thing. And we heard that they scored. Obviously, we had the commentary, were getting updates. And you think, oh, well, Salford have scored. It's too little, too late with a minute left. And then they scored again. And then they kicked that drop goal. I don't think I can still believe it happened now. And I... what Neil Udgell and co must have been thinking while it was happening is unbelievable. You know, probably £1 million just dropped out of his pocket. But that is life. And, you know, we talk about things being cyclical or cyclical. And then we talk about karma, you know, the sacking of Chris Chester. They didn't appoint a new coach until right at the very end. James Webster in charge. The Albert Kelly scenario when he went and he was suspended. Jamie Peacock seemingly in charge, but not actually putting his head over the parapet to take the flak.
Ah, but he trundled the ball up a few times.
Him coming back, sad end, really. You know, we're all at Old Trafford and cheered him off a champion. We didn't want to see him come. It's like the boxer coming back just for the, you know, for whatever, the money or whatever. Why? He'll say, obviously, not about the money, but why do it? Were the team any better for him in it? I don't think they were. You know, we all talk about this leadership myth. What they needed is someone to get them round the pitch, not take 10 drives up and go off again. Should they have gambled on Albert Kelly? Did they make a stance? And it's, as I said, it's all right having, you know, having, what's the word I'm looking for?
Morals?
Morals, yeah. But
to
they,
an extent,
do
yeah.
they pay the bill in the championships? And they're not going to do, are they? They're in the championship now because they've basically, they took a stance on Albert Kelly. If Kelly would have played, I think they would have been safe. He didn't play. They weren't safe. They got relegated. We understand Peacock offered his resignation at the end of the season. In my opinion, he should have gone. He is responsible for what's happened. And that's as I see it. And I look at that and think, sometimes you get what you deserve, and I have to say, in my opinion, okay, I got what they deserved at the end of the season.
But the facts of the matter are, if you look at those final two games of the season, and I was at the game against Huddersfield the week before, the £500,000 game, or whatever you want to call it, they should have won that game. They should have put Huddersfield in the £1 million game. They didn't do it on that occasion. And I've watched... I was in a hotel room listening to the commentary, Scully and Craig at the Lightstream Stadium, and I couldn't believe it, that they were winning, was it by 10 points with 2 minutes to go, and aren't in Super League anymore.
Mm.
And players have opportunities and they didn't take them to kill off that game, and we'll never know why. How do you think they'll do in the championship next year? Because they should be, you know, 1 to 100 favourites to finish top of the table and everything.
Yeah, and they will finish top of the table. You know, what I will credit Hull KR for is the way they've reacted to what happened. You know, they've come out, they've got the fans on board, they've signed the players, they've really had a go at it. Full credit, shows what a decent club they are. They just made a few decisions wrong. You know, I read Paul Cook's book, you know, the Judas one, and he's, Neil Udgell's in it a lot of time, And a lot of quotes, oh, we should have done it differently, we should have done it differently with hindsight. And I would imagine if you interviewed him about last season, I think he would say a lot of the same things. I wish I'd done it differently. So lessons need to be learned. But what I will say is class response from Rovers. They'll be there, but it doesn't matter what happens for 23 weeks. As Bradford found out the year before in the top two, you've got to win in those super eights or middle eights. Whether they will or not, I'm not so sure. I really am not so sure for Hull KR. And that's the sad thing. It could all be great now, but it's who's fit come those middle eights, who's not fit, how other teams are looking. Tough one.
If you're a Hull KR fan, close your ears. This is how it happened on Radio Yorkshire with Craig Murdoch and Gary Schofield.
So, we've got 53 seconds left of the game, Scoey.
Oh, boy. Who would have thought this now? And as I say, Salford just keeping the ball alive and getting themselves back within 4 points of Hull KR with 53 seconds to go. You know exactly that's one set of six for Salford, and they will just keep this ball alive.
Golden point, anyone? Wow. Oh. Salford have found a lifeline somewhere. Somehow they've got to make sure they use all six tackles. They don't need to score on the first, do they?
Correct. They don't need to just try and, you know, go from side to side straight away.
Mantellato makes sure that he's not put the ball dead. That's first off. It's into the arms of Dobson, who will hand it on to Griffin. Griffin will be tackled inside his own 20. Evels, who's got a brace, will pick up from dummy half and he'll scoot across. What Rovers can't do either is give away a penalty. Still 40 seconds left. Tompkins is at dummy half. Now they've got to try and get some width. Dobson, he's almost through. He's tackled.
27 seconds to go.
Robert Lewis at dummy half. We'll go get the ball back to Josh Jones. Josh Jones to try and power. He keeps it alive to Tompkins, to Hiraki. Further wide 15. It goes to Griffin. Griffin oh! Through the line. Has he got support? He's got Evels on his shoulder. Gets the ball to Evels. Evels steps inside. What a tackle by Mims. Inside the 10. Mims to his feet. We've got 3 seconds.
The ball wide. The score.
O'Brien. Gets the ball away
score!
To Flanagan. Flanagan forward. Into the arms of Mehdi Masala. Jones scores in the corner. Salford have got the kick to save the life. Salford
fans are going
onto the pitch. They've scored
the try in the corner.
They've scored in the last play of the game. The Salford fans are on the pitch. The Salford players are waving them off. How big is this kick? Wow, have we ever seen anything like this in Super League history? They've got to be a kick from O'Brien to keep Salford in Super League. This kick is huge. Gareth O'Brien is millimetres in from the right-hand touch.
He's kicking it to that side where the Salford fans are. They'll tell us if it's going over. Boy, oh boy, what was I saying? What, with 2 minutes to go, Salford were gone. We'll soon tell you. We'll see. Here we go. Gareth O'Brien for Salford's future. Championship or Super League. Here we go.
O'Brien, two steps in. It leaves his boot.
Missed it.
He's missed it. Golden point here at the KC Lightstream Stadium. Golden point, or is it extra time? Golden point. Has there ever been a season like this once, Colin? We go and...
I can't believe it, Craig.
Salford are out on the feet, aren't they? But somehow they've managed to work themselves back into the game. Welcome to listeners on DAB. You've joined us just at the start of Golden Point. Amazing, amazing finish to the game here at the KC Lightstream Stadium. Hull KR were 18-10 to the good with 2 minutes left on the clock, and somehow Salford have managed to get two tries in 2 minutes to take the game to Golden Point. O'Brien had a kick to win it for Salford. He couldn't do it, but the game has gone into Golden Point. Salford have got their ball in the hand on the 40-metre line as Murdoch Masala plays the ball to Dobson. Dobson further wide to Hiraki. Hiraki is tackled just over the halfway line. This is the last. Dobson's there. Does O'Brien go for the field goal? He's had a go.
He's got it.
He's had a go.
He's got it.
He's nailed it.
He's got it.
He's absolutely nailed it.
I don't believe it.
What a kick from Gareth O'Brien. Hull KR dropped to the
43 metres out, the Salford fans are going up. Salford for going ballistic.
Salford leap their Super League hopes and their dreams alive. They're here to fight another day next year. What a kick from Gareth O'Brien, and from death's door, Salford have found a way to keep their dreams, their Super League survival alive, and nobody but nobody in this ground expected that kick from Gareth O'Brien there. He couldn't do it with the conversion. Six tackles later, he does it with a drop goal. Wow, just wow, and wow, and how, Scully, have Hull KR lost that game?
I don't know, Craig Murdoch. I am absolutely lost for words. Can you believe it? The legend himself, Scully, he's lost for words. I can't believe it, Craig Murdoch. How have Salford won this game? 2 minutes to go, they're 8 points behind. They're 90 metres away from Hull Kingston's try line. And then all of a sudden they get themselves a lifeline. A minute and 10 seconds ago, I think it was 55 seconds ago, they score the length of the field again and score. And then from the kickoff, Gareth O'Brien, 43 metres out. Hull Kingston Rovers players didn't put any pressure. They weren't expecting the field goal. And I say, Gareth O'Brien, absolutely sensational drop kick. Salford, they stay in Super League. How, I just do not know. But the Hull Kingston Rovers, they're down to the Championship.
Welcome back to the final parts of the look back on the 2016 Rugby League season. It's Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire. Richard Shroyd and Mark Wilson in the studio. Before we get on to Hull FC, a word on Wigan. They won the grand final 12-6 against Warrington. Warrington, of course, who won the League Leaders' Shield. they're a team that people don't enjoy watching, Wigan, aren't they? But at the end of the day, they've got a plan. They stick to it. Oh, maybe I shouldn't say that. I mean, Sean Way's not my friend, so he won't delete me off his phone or whatever. But Wigan, worthy champions in the end.
Yeah. I think that's fair enough.
No one can be good for them, can
well, they? What is it? The last three, four grand finals yep. they've been in. They are, what? They are a unit. They remind me of the army. They're told to do something, and they do it, and they do it, and they do it, until they're not allowed to do it anymore. Sometimes it's not pretty to watch. Other times I've watched them that come back against Warrington when Ben Flower got sent off, and thought, why do they not play like this every week? Sean Wayne's a coach, Marmite figure. Some like him, some loathe him. He's got his team. He's achieved the goal at the start of the season. Credit to them for that. Real credit, honestly. I actually like him, Sean. I know we had a couple of crosswords last year, but I do like him. I think he's an interesting character. And he got the job done. And he was under pressure to deliver silverware.
Always under pressure. Always under pressure.
Well, he is.
Yeah, only, I mean, at Wigan.
That was an ironic thing, but he will have used that. You know, they'll have used that as motivation within. And he got it, and I'm pleased for him. I genuinely am pleased for him. I'd have loved to have known his innermost thoughts when he went in that press room, because I think he would have loved to have said certain things to certain people, and I might well have been one of those certain people. But they won it. And winners are grinners, and, you know, if you've lost, you've lost, haven't you? So they're going to be there or thereabouts again. You know, you look at them, just the way they play.
Yeah.
They never get blown away. I know that disaster at Wakefield, but they never get blown away too often and consistently. Their big thing, Matty Smith, who they had a lot of injuries. I know they made a lot of it as well, and they used that. McAlorum going for the season early on was a huge blow to them because they didn't have, and I thought Sam Powell came in and did a great job for Wigan. But they didn't have that natural. They didn't run with two hookers, if you like. So that was interesting. But Matty Smith was there. When they had all those injuries, he played every week pretty much. And I think he was the glue that held them together. Now he's gone to St. Helens. They've got Lula Wise come back in. Obviously, George Williams, we expect to have a bigger and better year than he did last season. It's going to be interesting how they cope without him. I think that'll be the big one. If they can do that, they'll be there or thereabouts again. They'll be certainly be in the top four.
Well, I hope there's a team from Yorkshire challenging for the Super League title in 2017. Could have been Hull. They got to the semi-finals, of course, missing out on the League Leaders' Shield as well. But finally, in 2016, they won at Wembley. Hull KR fans have nothing to sing about now because Hull FC won at Wembley. They've been relegated. Bad year for Hull KR. But for Hull FC and Lee Radford, we talk about the pressure of being the Wigan coach, with the pressure of being the coach of Hull FC in the Goldfish Bowl of Hull, which we're always told about. But they did what they've never done before and made history and did so in a enthralling final where it looked, what, 50, 60 minutes in, like it was going to be Warrington's year. It's always Warrington's year, but this week actually was Hull FC's year. And I guess that performance showed some of their frailties in the game, because as we've seen towards the end, they probably were missing a halfback or two. But a lot of tenacity, a lot of quality young players, and that ability to put the right plays together at the right time.
Well, we talk about recruitment, Rich, and you look at the recruitment they did. They did some good business. They brought in some good players. Not all of them worked out. You know, Frank Pritchard probably didn't have the year you'd want from a marquee player, and he's moved on. But they brought in good players, and they played some great rugby at times. And I watched them thrash St Helens in the cup. Other times they huffed and puffed. You know, probably just like that little bit of creativity when it really mattered. And I'd love to think now, with the experience they've got now, having a look at them doing the last month of the season again, having won at Wembley, I think they'll learn a hell of a lot from that. They couldn't carry it on. And even then, in the playoff, they very nearly got there, didn't they? They were a try short against Wigan. They've had a big year, Lee Radford. We'll hear from Lee Radford shortly, but and as he looks back on the year, I think he should have tremendous pride, Rich, in what he's achieved. Brilliant team. I think they will kick on. I think they'll be in the top four. I think they'll be challenging on all fronts. And it wouldn't surprise me to see them get to the grand final next season.
Well, we'll let Lee Radford have the last word on this programme. So before we hear the highlights from Wembley, before we hear from Lee Radford, 2016, not a vintage year.
No. You know, we talk about quality and the number of games that you've been at. I still love going to the rugby league, don't get me wrong. I'd rather watch rugby league than football. You generally, a bad game of rugby league is still better than a bad game of football. But look, that's how it is. And rugby league, we used to go and have probably 10 games where you think, wow, privileged to be there. Probably not as many as that. But at the same time, I think the spectacle is still there. I think we've got to work on the number of games. Phil Kaplan's ground me down. Got to work. Less is more and all that. I think more onus on the club to generate more income. And I think if we can do that, I don't think it's as doom and gloom as everyone would have you believe. But I think if you made the NRL play 30-odd times, it'd get pretty monotonous. And I've watched some NRL, and it is monotonous, a lot of it. It's boring to watch. It can be. They're trying to play the perfect game, and in the perfect game, nothing happens. So, yeah, less is more. Not a vintage, but still an exciting one. And I think still more to come from this time. And I think there's a lot of people with a lot to prove in 2017.
We look forward to it, don't we?
2017. We do. More games than anyone else, Rich, next season.
Guaranteed. Make sure you're with us, because you'll hear more like this. We'll hear from Lee Radford in a moment, then his summation of 2016. But to close out this programme, here we head to Wembley. It's August, it's sunny again, and it's Hull versus Warrington with Craig Murdoch and Phil Kaplan.
Arm in the air, you'll hear the roar as Radford puts boot to ball. The game is underway. The Challenge Cup final here at Wembley, Hull FC against Warrington. Jamie Shaw catches the ball, and first drive is a good carry from Liam Watts. Great offload from Hull FC and Minicello. Hull FC are inside the 10, and Liam Watts, who's got a bit of energy, gets his arm free, and the ball's back to Houghton. So this is three offloads on the bounce from Hull FC. Can Bowden force his way through? No, he can't. But he's only 10 metres away from the line, with lots of tackles remaining for Hull FC. They'll go to the right. Not the best pass, but it's into the arms of Tuma Vavi, who goes further wide to Raj. It's intercepted by Sandow, and Sandow's going to put 80, 90 metres. Michaels is chasing him. He won't catch him. Good night, Chris Sandow. Here comes Shaw. Can Shaw get it? Oh, you bet he can. Great work. Michaels was never going to get there, but Shaw was. Dwyer's going to try and pinch it from dummy half. Can Dwyer get over? Yes, he can. That's harsh from Hull FC. It took something special to get through the defensive line. Sandow intercepted and went 90 metres. Shaw got back somehow and brought him down. But then on the resulting player, it's into the arms of Matty Russell from Brad Dwyer's initial scoot at the line, and he gets over, and Warrington take the lead. It's Warrington 4, Hull FC 0. Harsh, 194 minutes the Hull FC defence lasted then without conceding a try. But that's over now, and it was Pritchard, who's been pretty good for Hull FC since his introduction as you say, huge bit of luck as well, because he just batted it up into the air. It could have gone anywhere, but he reacted first. Gidley adds the extras, and it's Hull FC 0, Warrington 6. Sandow's in the pocket. He's going to play the double bluff, and he's going to run it, and he comes up with an error, and it's gone forward into the arms of Toby King.
That's half-time.
And that'll be half-time, and he'll go the hooter. 40 minutes on the clock. It's not been the high scoring game that you and I thought, Phil. It's been gripping. There's been mistakes in both sides. It's been hot. It's been sticky. But the game, as we go into the sheds, is certainly still in the balance. Gidley, as you say, from right in front, successful with his first attempt, kicking into the sun. Hull's right edge, Warrington's left edge, as they attack the line, he's bathed in sunshine.
Kicking towards the Warrington fans as well.
Yeah. We're right behind it, so we'll. No, pretty soon if he's good.
Oh, he's missed it.
He's missed it. That's a shocker.
That's a let off for Hull.
Yeah, and it was a poor contact, wasn't it?
It was.
Fluffed it right off the boot, and Hull can maybe take a bit of confidence from that. He never looked. He's not been great the full game, Gidley, has he? You know, he's been one of the Warrington players. You know, we've not seen anything from Ben Curry as of yet. Clark with a bit of pace, and Clark's into a gap. 2-on-1 on this far side. He's got the ball into the arms of Curry. Curry up against Shaw. He's too quick. He's too quick. He's Ben Curry. And Warrington score the second try. What about the pace from the back rower there? Gidley from the touchline. He missed one earlier. Has he drifted that one in? No, he hasn't. He's just to the right of the post. So it's 10-0. It remains. Mane Fanui stood in front of him. Now it'll come back to Sneed. Sneed with the little kick over the top. He had time. It's decent. Fanua rises. Fanua gets the ball. Fanua scores to the black and whites. They are back in this game. Hull FC and Mark Sneed with the boot. He's done nothing ball in hand, but boy, can he kick when it matters. Mark Sneed round the corner. Hull FC fans will tell you. There's the answer, Phil. The hole in Trinity. 40-20. Kick to the corner. And the icing on the cake. The 2 points over the top. Hull FC 6. Warrington 10. Then it's into the arms of Sneed. Sneed further wide to Fanua. Fanua into the arms of Michaels. Michaels will step on the inside. And he'll go back against the grain. Good defence from Matty Russell. Just outside the 20. This is the last. Hull FC going down a channel there. And Mark Sneed puts in a kick. What's he gone down that route for? Fanua knocks the ball back inside. It's into the arms of Jamie Shaw. Jamie Shaw will score into the post for Hull FC. Hull FC are back and level pegging with a kick to come. Again, it's Mark Sneed with a kick from absolutely nowhere. Mane Fanua, as he did for the try, he jumps up, gets the ball, keeps the ball on the inside to Jamie Shaw, and his first real attacking opportunity. Ball in hand, and Jamie Shaw scores under the dot for the black and white. Sneed to put Hull FC 12-10 in front round the corner. Warrington have all walked forward. Mark Sneed adds the goal, and Hull FC are in front. And from absolutely nowhere, when Hull FC needed Mark Sneed to step up to the plate, he stood up to the plate, come up with two kicks, two tries on the back of Mane Fanua's brilliant play, and Hull FC are now in front 12-10. 2 minutes 20 seconds left on the clock. They're leading by 12-10. It's into the arms of Sandow, further wide it goes to Atkins. Atkins steps inside, still going, is Atkins. Somehow Washbrook makes the tackle. Now it's to Sandow. Sandow floats it across the far side to Curry, who for me is the danger man. Can he get over the line? Curry wins it for Warrington. Curry's over the line. No, he isn't. He's lost the ball.
What a tackle from Danny Houghton. Danny Houghton has saved the game for Hull FC. That is an unbelievable tackle from a man who makes his living out of making unbelievable tackles. We are literally a minute and 40 seconds from time. Ben Curry steps inside. He's all on a scorer. Only one man chased back to get him. That was Danny Houghton. And he has meant sure that Hull will win this game.
And Danny Houghton, if there was ever any doubt, it will go down now, Phil, in Hull FC folklore. What a player. It couldn't have happened to a nicer man. I'm just saying, I've had a little wager on Danny Houghton for the MOM. I don't think he deserves to get it. For that tackle alone, Danny Houghton deserves amazing credit for him. What a guy. What a tackle. And that's what it shows that it means, that he had no right to make that tackle.
It was a straight one-on-one tackle, and he was actually behind Ben Curry, who all Curry could see was the try line. He didn't sense that Houghton was behind him, but you couldn't believe that the difference in physique. All Curry had to do was use his lean body to lean over, and Houghton's tackling technique to hit ball and all was absolutely sensational.
Houghton's going to get all
the... 52 tackles Danny Houghton's made today.
Great tackle from Hull. Hull FC needed to be. The ball's on the floor, it's into the arms of a black and white player.
That's it.
There's 5 seconds left in the game. Hull FC's Wembley hoodoo is going to be put to bed. There goes the hooter. Hull FC, after 150 years in their existence, 75 times of trying to win this competition at Wembley, they've finally done it. And Lee Radford and Gareth Ellis, Danny Houghton, they're the guys who fired Hull FC to a win.
But Gareth Ellis, at 35 years old, for the first time lifts the Rugby League Challenge Cup. That means Hull FC finally win at Wembley. They've won the 2016 Ladbrokes Challenge Cup in a belting final by 12 points to 10.
Last year, fantastic year. Has it had a chance to sink in now? Because I know when we spoke to you about Wembley, you were in the midst of it all and you had other things to look forward to. Have you had a chance to reflect back now?
Yeah, I think obviously in the off-season as a staff and as a club, obviously we've gone for our reviews and a bit of reflection on the year. Plenty of positives, but also still a fair bit of improvement as well. I think just looking through where we was in the comp in terms of stats, we was second and third. In an awful lot, and ultimately that's in a nutshell where we finished as well. So although it was very a step in the right direction, there's still plenty to go at as well.
You won at Wembley. No one could underestimate what an achievement that was for you, for the team, and for this club. It's everyone talks about the monkey on your back. What did it feel like to have got rid of that?
Yeah, I'm really glad about that. I just think there'd be less apprehension obviously this time around. I've literally, before the draw and then before a ball's even kicked in the cup, it's mentioned you've never won there, and the further in the competition you go, the more it's mentioned, and just to finally pull that to bed is obviously pleasing. So we're the day itself was obviously very special, and as a coach and as a playing group, you'd love to achieve that again, and I don't think the want has died down any for next year, but the apprehension I think will off, so that's a real good thing for the club, I think.
What does it mean to you to do that? Because whoever was going to do it was going to be a history maker, and it was you, a local lad, you've done it for your team.
Yeah, no, obviously really, really pleased, but we're still striving to be successful as well, so over the coming seasons, and I'm not falling in love with myself by any stretch of the imagination. Ultimately we didn't achieve what we wanted to achieve last year, and we felt we was capable of achieving. So obviously that is our focus, for 2017.
How hard was it, with hindsight, picking the lads up after Wembley, such an emotional thing, to go again? Because you're straight into that, you've got like 3 weeks and you're in the playoffs.
It was, as much as you tried selling it, the grand final is the ultimate. That's the one. You finish the season on a high. You swan off on holiday with a ring on your finger. You get to appreciate it. It just, for a lot of people within the organisation, within the club, the cup was the ultimate because, as you've said, it never been done. So it was a tough sell. I think mentally it had a massive knock-on effect, obviously, in the games leading up, and to the point where we got to Wigan and got to half-time and thought, oh, we don't have a chance of getting to a GF here. So, hopefully we can learn from our experiences, and if we don't, we're very foolish. And hopefully we can be in a position again, obviously, to be able to learn from it, I suppose.
You had a lot of player movement last year, that's been kept to a minimum this year. You're building from a very strong base, you've added a bit of quality in there.
Yeah, I think year one, obviously in charge, there was a 14 player turnaround, which was is not healthy for any organisation, and when that happens, there's obviously there's something wrong with the foundations, and when I took the job I felt there was, and then last year was a seven player turnaround, and this year four, so we're certainly, heading in the right direction in terms of our squad, and there might be even less next time, and if there is less next time, then it's a sign that we're probably doing things right, I think.
Albert Kelly, is it a gamble or is it a is it a no-brainer?
Yeah, look, it's a real funny one. It's I spoke to him like yesterday, the day before. And, you know, every paper you pick up, is a risk. Is, you know, and he's mentioned in the same you know, sentences as Chrissy Sandow and Todd Carney and Dave Taylor, and for me, you know, there is no risk involved. We was where we was anyway. We've got two players in Carlos and Jake Connor who you know will feature there throughout the year at some point, and are very comfortable playing in the sixth position as well. So, you know, he's coming to that point in his career now where probably chances are running out at this side of the world. He's coming to that age where naturally he matures anyway. But he's, you know, he's been good since he's come through the door. And, you know, if I'm him and I'm picking the paper up every day and reading, it's a risk. You know, that's a pretty good reason to want to prove a lot of people wrong, and hopefully that's what he's about. That's in his makeup.
And the benefit for you is, of course, he's been in this city. He knows what rugby league is here, doesn't he? That's got to be an advantage to him, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think it probably eradicates the, you know, will they settle or won't they settle, and you know, will the family settle? All that's already in place, which is good. But I'm looking forward to him playing. I think he'll add to a very good squad. I think what he brings is anticipation and the ability to finish from deep, and I think that's, you know, if you're looking for our squad, there's probably only Jamie Shaw that plays that way and that style. So I think, yeah, he's going to contribute massive for us.
You're a team of winners now. Have you noticed a change about the lads as they come in?
I've noticed a lot of improvements in sort of the third tier of the squad. You know, in 12 months, their skill set, physically, they've come on leaps and bounds, and that's really, really pleasing. Because naturally, if their skill set and their fitness improve, then the quality of session does. And for that to happen, then the group improves. So, yeah, that's something I've been really pleased about this pre-season, and the fact that nobody's, you know, right behind the eight ball, where, you know, we had a couple last year. They're all they've all turned up in good shape and you know, looking to make improvements on the game.
You had a great year the past year. The year before, a very tough one. Have you learned a lot? Is the all overall experience you've had, has that taught you so much?
I think the year before was the one I learned from. You know, we finished 11th, you know, and I think had it not been for Bradford getting the points deducted, would have been in a real dogfight of relegation, which for a club of our stature is, you know, it's unheard of, or should be unheard of. So that was a tough year, and I learned a lot about myself that year, and I learned, you know, a fair bit about some of the individuals that are still within the group as well. And then, like I said, from 11th to 8th to 3rd, you know, then, you know, I'd like to see that progression continue, and that ultimately, that is, you know, the end result is what we're striving for.
And finally then, looking at it this year, I guess you're going to tell me you want to win everything, you want to win every game. What would be a realistic target, do you think, for you boys?
Well, we want to be competitive in you know, the top end of the competition. And to do that, you've got to pick points up consistently, and you've got to make sure, you know, in them cup performances, you bang at it. And I think realistically, we've got a squad that is capable of that. You know, I've been asked a couple of times, do you think teams will take you a little bit more serious this time round? And, you know, I think after 10 rounds last season, we was being considered as a threat to the competition. And we handled and adapted to that really well. So I don't think that'll be the case. I think what is key is obviously the group want to take that next step. And I'm sure that they do, like any sportsman or any professional rugby league player does. They want to win things, and ultimately that's what everybody's striving to do.
Bill League on Radio Yorkshire, more games than any other radio station. Now that's what I call unrivaled.
15 away from his own line. Scott Moore out of dummy half. The Wakefield fans saying he's offside. They're all offside.
I think they even shout offside when they're warming up.
Yeah, but they're warming up, aren't they?
That's what I'm saying. When the opposition warming up, they're shouting offside. Salford are a different side this year. There's no I in that team, is there? Team is T-E-A-A. You know what I mean? There's no I in their team anymore, is there? They are a team, proper team.
He slipped the ball out the back, but it had gone forward. It knocked on Balloon. Faux Balloon. Picked it up and dived over.
This has been an unbelievable match. 38 points to 34.
Are we bringing that out as a song? You score, we score, we score, you score. You score, we score, you score, we score.
No, Scully, shut up. Ball going out the back now. Here's a chance for Cudjoe.
Well, that's what it's. That's what it is, Mark Wilson.
I'm not saying it's not. It's your singing that I've got a problem with. Wakefield lead by 4 points to nil against Widnes. Surprised we didn't hear Richard cheering in the studio there. Scott, are you?
Yeah, very surprised. He's a little bit one-eyed, Richard, isn't he?
That's a bit harsh.
It's true.
I think he's quite fair. I think you're being harsh there.
Fair?
Yeah, I think he is.
Please. Another head-scratcher again for the coach of Paul Anderson.
6 points apiece here.
Man, these are full-time professional players. I don't expect my three-year-old grandson started training last week. I don't expect him to do them sort of mistakes. Please.
Casper bringing it away.
Wait, I wonder Paul Anderson's no hair and Daryl Powell's full of grey.
I think I must have been a coach in a former life.
Oh, please.
Salford showing some bottle there, Scully.
Yeah, showing some spirit, as I keep mentioning. There's no I in their team. It's T-A-M-E.
Hold on, you've got it wrong again.
Is that right this weekend, Mark?
No, you've got it wrong.
Why do defensive wingers, when you're defending against your own winger, why do they always shoot on? Why just stay on the touchline and the winger can't score, can he? I just don't understand it.
That's
why
the wingers.
Well, say no more then. You mean the linesmen without the flags? Is that what we're saying? Like goalkeepers in football?
Yeah, if they had any brains going, they'd be in the centre.
Say no more then.
That's what I'm saying.
Right, okay, right. So you wingers, the Wingers Association?
No.
It came from Craig Mordock. Well, I'll agree with him anyway. Yeah, you've no brains.
Just having a think here, Scott. If you were loitering, you know, stand off in the centres and Moy Moy was getting all excited, would you just be shuffling one further out in the defensive line?
I'd be stood on the wing, don't worry about that one. Hey, hold on. I was against Meningen and Miles at 18. I didn't shirk my responsibility there.
Never said you did. But as you got older and wiser, Scott, you've got to delegate things like that, haven't you?
Well, as I got older, it only happened once. I moved to stand off and got out of the way. Don't worry about that. I went in the centre too long. Well, I learned my lesson. I'm just laughing at my own mucker here. Martin Clawson, look at Martin here. He is the conditioner for Wakefield Trinity. Martin, if you don't run any quicker...
Well, he's got a woolly hat on. It's about 15 degrees in Wakefield this
Martin,
afternoon.
If you don't run any quicker, it's going to be dark by the time he kicks his ball. And he's the Wakefield conditioner.
Well, he's brought the kicking tee on. He's brought the wrong one.
Take a bow, Martin Clawson. He was my conditioner as well at Barrow. He won the Bulls.
I'm not being rude, Scoy. I don't think that's a glowing assessment of his capabilities.
He's getting more, 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 isn't he?
He is.
Is that the time for the song? More, more, more. How do you like it?
Yeah, I've turned his mic off. Don't worry about that.
Is Gail going to go to this left-hand side again? He is. Under pressure. Was that a late tackle? Cass fans think so. Referee says no, it wasn't. Gail stays down. He has a look who it was, realises it's Lamatazzi, and runs away and says nothing.
Yeah. And rightly so. That's the vision and awareness Luke Gale has got.
that was a halfback or a fullback. He's having a go at him there, realises it's Lamatazzi and just says thank you.
Well, I should be a motivational coach, don't you think?
Well, you wind enough people up.
Always get it. I call it a reaction.
A reaction. I bet Daryl Powell were delighted that you called St Helens rubbish in your column in the League Express.
Rubbish and donkeys and no thoroughbreds. Well,
yeah.
Mark, this is why you employ me, son. I can only give an opinion on what I see. It's as simple as that.
Got his nice pink boots on this afternoon. Do you have any pink boots, Scully?
Please. Do me a favour, Mark, will you?
I think you'd look rather fetching in them, your little sidesteps. Burst of pace.
Interesting. Pink boots, eh?
Mm. What boots did you wear?
What do you mean, what boots did I wear? What colour boots?
Yeah, what make?
Oh, I had different sponsors.
Did you?
Yeah. Nike, New Balance, Mizuno. Yeah, had different sponsors.
Very good.
Mizuno were the best ones.
Why, they give you the most money, did they?
Bit harsh.
Bit harsh.
The reason you wear them, let's be fair.
Bit harsh.
Cheat, Richie, take that. I'll just give you a little bit. Me and Matt Wilson, stay close to me. Hold on, hold on. Stay close to me. It's Gary Schofield, not Gary Barlow.
Strike against the head here, and Lee thought they had that. And I think Richard Silverwood was that surprised. There was actually a push in the scrum. He didn't know what to, he thought, I better do this again.
Well, you're not allowed to do it anymore. You can't push it, you can't strike for the ball. The old duckers, Oh, why can't we do that anymore? What do you reckon about the shoulder, Chad? Should be brought back, shouldn't it?
Yeah, I think so. But hey, we're dinosaurs, mate. 2 metres away from the line. Cass turned down the 2 points.
Dinosaur!
McShane at dummy half.
I'll tell you what, me and you should get ponytails. Me and you, then, what do you reckon?
Took me about 18 years to grow one like that.
Oh, we can buy one. Have you ever seen the Only Fools and Horses, where Del Boy sells the ponytails? We'll get one of them. Shake of the head from Mr. Wilson.
But they are, the word is team, isn't it, for Wakefield? They do complement each other very well.
How do you spell team?
I'm going T-E-A-M. What about yourself?
Exactly the way that I spell it, T-A-E-M.
Yeah, you got it wrong again.
No, I didn't.
You did.
No, I didn't.
You did.
No, I didn't.
I think everybody's had enough now, Scully. We've had enough. Yeah. Fans have had enough. The players have had enough. Let's blow the U2 and all go on.